Do we have any fans of Storage Wars out here today? Does anyone ever watch Storage Wars? I see you back there, Suzanne, Jack. I see you, Laureen. All right, so we have some people who know of this show. Is there anyone out here who doesn't know what Storage Wars is? I see a couple of hands, maybe some people who don't have A&E. Well, I must admit that I have never watched a full episode of the A&E reality show Storage Wars. I was able to glean the premise of the show with a few stop-ins while channel surfing. And while watching this very briefly for a few moments here and there, I was able to get a full description of what this American reality show was all about. It has been described as a show where modern pirates blindly bid on abandoned storage units that may contain junk or treasure. In California, when the monthly rent is not paid on the storage units for 3 months in a row, an auctioneer can sell its contents. And here is where the producers of Storage Wars step in. They bring in teams of professional treasure hunters who bid on the lockers and then follow them as they resell the objects, hoping to make a profit, hoping to get more for the stuff that they bought than what they paid for it. They go in sight unseen, bidding on closed storage doors, hoping that somehow behind those doors is something so valuable that when they resell it, they will make a profit. But one thing that I have noticed in my limited viewings of Storage Wars is that it is very rare to find something very valuable in the storage lockers. There are very few antique roadshow moments where one finds that the ugly vase passed down from grandma is actually from the 17th century and worth $500,000 at auction. We don't see that on Storage Wars. There are no Tiffany lamps. There are no tapestries from the Middle Ages. There are never anything of truly great value in those storage units. And you know why? Because we don't store the stuff that is valuable in storage units. The only thing we put in storage units are the clothes that our kids have outgrown, furniture that is a little questionable for the living room. And we store in there old dishes that we no longer use, electronics that are no longer in fashion. How many of you have a VHS cassette player at home? God dog it, what are y'all doing with your lives? You know how... We're not even using DVDs anymore, we're streaming, but I love you. And you know why I love you? Because you have mastered something that I have not been able to master. And that is how to not jump from one technology to the next technology. If your technology works for you, keep it. But I have a secret. There's higher resolution now. The picture and sound is much better. But you go ahead on, keep doing you, keep doing you. Invariably, the only thing that are in those storage lockers are those things, the mundane items of everyday life. Furniture, dishes, clothes, sporting equipment, and old electronics. These storage lockers, it seems, are mainly rented out to house the overflow. They are paid for month after month and sometimes year after year to hold those items that we no longer use or need but are unable to let go of. The show reminds me somehow of our scripture for this morning, which all began with a dispute between brothers over an inheritance. How many families have been destroyed over the division of their parents' estate? The man who comes to Jesus was probably the younger brother, because in Jewish law, the oldest brother got possession of all the property and a double share of the goods. Now, this seems strange to us today, but the reason for this was to prevent the family farm from being divided into such small pieces that it was hard for one person to sustain their family. We don't know whether this argument was a division over a family house and farm, but Jesus' parable that he uses to illustrate the problem indicates that it might well have been. I have wondered this week if Jesus made this parable up on the spot because he knew what the brothers were arguing over. And maybe, perhaps, not saying this is so, but maybe, just maybe, as Jesus is giving this parable, he is speaking of these two brothers who are arguing over an inheritance. See, in those days in Palestine, disputes were often settled by going to a local rabbi rather than filing charges in court. So this brother came to Jesus wanting him to settle the dispute in his favor. But Jesus refuses to intervene in the dispute. He tells the man plainly that he had not been appointed to settle such arguments, but he offers this parable to address the issue instead. He tells the story of a rich man who, though farming is a risky business, rife with potential disaster from weather, weeds, and worms, this man had managed to be successful even before his bumper crop. This rich man had such a harvest that now he was incredibly rich. He had a problem everyone would envy. His barns were not big enough to store all of the wheat. Could you imagine if you had his problem, if the bank was not enough to store all your wealth, if your house was not big enough to store all of your many valuable possessions, if there was no way that all of your food, all of your sustenance could be contained in your refrigerator and pantry? That is the problem that this man had. This crop was enough to sustain him for many years, and he had to protect it. Back in first century Palestine, there were no storage unit companies for him to rent from like we have today. So the rich man had a brilliant solution. He would tear down the barns that he has and build bigger ones. He had so much stored up that he could quit work and live a life of ease. There was only one problem. It was not only the production of crops in semi-arid Israel that was uncertain. Life itself was uncertain then as it is today. Everyone wants to live to an advanced old age. But if one checks the obituaries or watches the news, one soon realizes this is not the case. Some people die young due to illness or the unthinkable acts of violence that are thought up almost weekly in the United States. Last week, 3 people were killed in court, including 2 children, at a garlic festival in Northern California. Yesterday, 20 lives were lost at the hands of yet another AK-47-toting white supremacist in El Paso. And this morning, we woke to find that another 9 were killed in Dayton, Ohio, overnight. Death is no respecter of wealth or poverty, old age or youth. Rich as well as poor die young. One thing is for certain: everyone dies. Sorry. Be it peacefully in our sleep at a ripe old age, or cut down in a rash of violence in our youth, death is inevitable. that rich man had no longer thought he was set for life than the angel of death came for him. Now the children were left to fight over his estate. Jesus makes it clear that this man's mistake was in storing his wealth in barns rather than being rich towards God. It seems short and simple. Don't covet earthly things and be rich towards God. We like simple, pragmatic answers. Will Rogers once said that a sermon had a good beginning, a good ending, and not too much in between. But we have to get to the in-between. Because if you are like me, you have struggled to avoid coveting the lives and lifestyles of the rich and famous and wondered at the phrase, rich toward God. I mean, what does that mean? We get thou shalt not covet. It made the Big Ten, after all. We all know that from the time we are young. But how does one be rich towards God? I know a lot of you may be trembling in your seats right now thinking, oh my God, another sermon on stewardship. The pastor asking for us to give more money. But it's not that. Psych your minds. Because as much as we try to avoid it, we all covet earthly goods from time to time. We are taught that it is our responsibility to diligently save and store goods and wealth for a rainy day. This type of covetousness is one that says that I cannot trust God to provide for me in uncertain times. It is so deceptive because you can say it in your heart that you aren't like the rich man, that you aren't like the man who tries to store up all of his blessings in barns and keep it all to himself. You can say that you're not like him who looks this gift horse in the mouth and says, rather than do something special with all that I have, I will do what I've always been doing, which is store it up all for me and my progeny. You can say, if you're like me, well, I'm not rich, and I'm not really interested in the glamour of extreme wealth, usually. You can say, like I say, you just want enough just in case. How many times have we heard the stories? How many times have we experienced for ourselves as our parents and grandparents got older and their need for health care grew and it became impossible to take care of them because it was so expensive? So when we say that we are saving for our future, many times what we think in our mind is we are saving so that our children don't have to go into debt to take care of us when we become too old to take care of ourselves. So with this playing in the backs of our minds, we stuff as much as we can into our little barns. We take on extra jobs so that we can be sure that we will have enough. But in doing so, we take away from the things that make us rich towards God. We do not have time for prayer or for Bible study or to attend worship because we have to work a second job. We are concerned more about our physical well-being and not enough about our spiritual. The quality of our life is compromised by doubt and worry, always wondering if enough is enough. Will there be enough when I need it? Will I be able to take care of myself in my later years? Will I have enough to eat, a place to stay? God forbid, vacations and having a good time. Will all of that be there? It is most pitiful. As these are the same people, myself included, who work ourselves to death and never fully enjoy all of the possessions that we worked so hard to attain. There is a second class of coveters as well. They are the poor who wish to be like the rich man. We are jealous of his possessions and think that that person should be us. We're the ones who hope that we have a rich, distant relative that we did not know so well, but that was extremely wealthy and leave us a large inheritance. We quietly wish for the death of someone we do not know so that we could inherit. Am I the only one who's had that wish? I have a great-grandfather whose name is Walton. And many times I have spent just imagining, what if this Walton, whose name was Charlie and who was a mulatto, he was half black and half white, what if his father was one of the Walmart Waltons? Oh, the daydreams. Or perhaps you are hoping to win the Powerball or Mega Million lottery so that you can say goodbye to all of this day-to-day scrimping and saving, all of this economy airfare rather than first class, all of this scrimping and saving and doing every little bit that we can to squirrel away through our future, but get this windfall, much like the gentleman in our parable. Some are not content with the daydreams of windfalls. Some resort to swindling others out of their wealth or resort to outright theft. Now, this is a more obvious form of covetousness, but we find ways to justify the attitude. If only I would win the lottery, I would give so much to the poor, and I would tithe 10% to the church. Oh, if I had a dollar every time someone imagined that. But are people who win the lottery more happy? Statistics seem to show that this is often not the case at all. Some who have won the lottery have committed suicide. Others have been murdered. There is an increase in divorces. Your old friends come to you with their hands out, saying nothing of your family members. The net result is that the winning of the lottery ticket is often a ticket to misery. If you win, you lose. I know many of you are out there saying, hey, I want to roll the dice. I'd like to win and see what that loss feels like. But even if you have ease for a short time after winning, you will still lose your life. Your beneficiaries will fight over what is left. Then there are those who are already rich, and that is not enough. The first billionaire, John D. Rockefeller, was asked, how much is enough? And he replied, just a little bit more. These types of coveters keep on working to add to their own vast wealth. They are never satisfied with the abundance that they have accumulated and continue like a hamster in a wheel, running and running, gaining more and more, and yet never satisfied and never truly happy with all that they have acquired. The mansion was not enough. The yacht was insufficient. The jewels, the rare art, the entree into circles of wealth and power were not enough. The private island off of the coast of Tahiti was not enough. Steve Jobs, one of the richest men alive, died at the relative young age of 56. To his autobiographer, he expressed one regret about how he raised his children. He said, I wanted my kids to know me. I wasn't always there for them, and I wanted them to know why and to understand what I did. More than all he acquired, what he wanted most was more time with and understanding from his children. The conclusion of the matter is this: it is better to leave the inheritance of a memory of being kind and generous and a testimony that one lived as a follower of Jesus in all aspects of their life. Kindness and love do not have to be divided in a way that one gets more and another gets less. Love is one of those things that the more you give away, the more you have. A life that is rich towards God is one where we trust God for our daily bread and don't feel like it's all on us to provide for our old age. A life that is rich towards God is one where we accumulate good deeds towards others rather than material possessions that we do not need or forget as soon as they are out of sight. A life rich towards God is a life spent attempting to alleviate the suffering of others rather than covering our pain with many possessions. A life rich towards God is a life spent thirsting after justice for all rather than freedom only for those who can afford the best lawyers. A life rich towards God is a life spent listening for and heeding the voice of the Lord that calls on us to return so that we know for sure that when death comes, we have the promise of everlasting life. Is this not the riches we should strive for? Jesus shared this parable so that we could avoid being like the rich man who believed that he had a storage problem rather than a spiritual problem. He thought that his problem when he got this bumper crop was that he did not have enough room to house it all. But what Jesus is telling us that it was not storage that was his problem. It was spiritual closeness to God that was his problem. Because one of the solutions to this bumper crop would be to, someone say, share it. Give it away. Why, when I said that, did I hear Red Hot Chili Peppers in the back of my mind? Give it away, give it away, give it away now. Give it away, give it away, give it away now. Makes me want to go back to my youth. Give it away. Problem solved. He already had barns filled with wheat and grain. Imagine how full his life could have become if he saw his problem as spiritual, the inability to share all that God had given him, rather than storage. Imagine the lives that he could have changed if he looked at this windfall as a blessing, calling him to be a blessing. If he had known that no amount of wealth can insulate us from the inevitability of death, and that the best thing that he could leave behind was a legacy of love, a legacy of generosity, and a legacy of faithfulness to God. I have my own storage wars story to tell you. After my 2-year residency in Brooklyn, I was not able to get a church. I want someone to suck their teeth in disgust. I had the most difficult time getting a call. And since I was living in New York City, and New York City is one of the most expensive places in the world to live, I decided that I would move home with my mom in Arkansas until I found a call. Until a church called me to be their pastor. Now, as I was making this move from New York to Arkansas, I knew that I could not take all of the things that I had accumulated while in Brooklyn, a dining room table and chairs. A living room filled with couches and end tables and televisions and all the things that one needs to live. And so I made the decision that rather than put my stuff in storage, rather than even sell those things with the hope that I would buy some more in the future, that I would give it to a friend who was getting her first apartment. After seminary, she had shared apartments and houses with other students, and so she did not have dining room furniture. She did not have living room furniture of her own. She did not have all of the bedroom furniture that she needed. And so rather than put my stuff in storage and pay $350 a month to store an apartment size worth of home goods, I gave it all to her. And to this day, I have never regretted that decision. I have never regretted giving what I did not need to someone who needed it. I have never regretted paying $350 a month for some furniture that I could not use. I was out of work for 18 months. Somebody quick, do the math. God is telling us that if we have storage bins on the outskirts of town, if we have garages filled with boxes and bins of things that we never use, if we have basements filled with the goods that God has blessed us with that we no longer need, we don't have a storage problem. We have a spiritual problem. And the Lord has an answer. Amen.